All right, yeah. In about 2014, 2015, my wife and I had the opportunity to attend a conference that was about a week long on relationships. And on Sunday evening, when we met for the first time to sort of do our orientation, we looked out around the room of maybe 25, 30 other people that were perfect strangers from every church group maybe out there. And yeah, we didn't know a single soul, had never met anyone there. And at the end of the week when we left, we got in the car and I said, wow, what was that? What happened? Because at the end of that week, I felt closer and more connected to those people in that conference than I did to my church families after 10 years of attending a church. Within 1 week, going from perfect strangers to feeling more connected. And I said, what was that? And I realized in Dean's session that it was that brotherhood band. We were all Christians. We were all involved in missions and in member care in relation to missions. And that created that bond. And then throughout the sessions and over meal times and in the evening, we had opportunity to share deeply.
Thank you.
And have deep, meaningful conversations that really knit us together. And it happened really fast. And I was actually shocked and surprised at how rapidly it happened. So this session today, this morning, is about deep and meaningful conversations. My name is Rodney, and this is my wife, Dawn. And we're going to co-lead this session. And as explained earlier, the content we cover here will be utilized in your small groups as you discuss how to build an engaged or foster an engaged church. So like Dean shared, it's more than just the service or the building. It's about really having that brotherhood feeling or that connectedness. So we're going to talk about deep, meaningful conversations. And we live in a society where we have lots of technology, lots of distractions that have sort of eroded societies or even our ability in our churches for us to have deep conversations. We're used to knowing a lot about each other's lives, but we rarely get deep. So in this session, I'd like to have a brief introduction to what we mean when we talk about deep, meaningful conversations. And then we would like to look at what are the things that are holding us back, that prevent us from deep, meaningful conversations. And then how to create a safe place, how to draw people out, how to listen well, what to do when you're unsure of what to say next. And then time to connect, making time to connect. So that's what we're going to cover in our session. And As a way of introduction, I want to describe what a deep, meaningful conversation is, or what we mean when we talk about deep, meaningful conversations. Because the photo of the iceberg up there, the top of the iceberg, what you see represents the part of your life that you share freely, even with strangers. You post on social media. You talk about, people say, how is your week? You say, oh, great, you know, I seen you did peaches on Friday type of. That's the tip of the iceberg. But like the iceberg, most of us, or all of us, have things that are below the surface that people can't see. And there's a lot more below the surface in our lives than what we typically share with others. Some of us are blessed by maybe a small church or a close friend where we can share about what's below the surface. But we want to describe what a deep, meaningful conversation is. So a deep, meaningful conversation is when you're able to share vulnerably about yourself, self-disclosure about what you think, feel, or believe about life or a sensitive topic. It happens when you're opening up the deep places of your soul that you don't just open up to strangers. Maybe it's talking about your struggles and sharing about who you are on the inside. It's while discussing spiritual or relational issues or topics, maybe your core beliefs, the things that you really care about, you really feel. And it's those conversations that make you really think about life and the meaning of life and your course. So it's not where you went on vacation or what you did this week, but it's talking about those internal, inside type of things. And this is, deep, meaningful conversations don't happen in a one way, format, but it's sharing together. It's having opportunity for you to share deeply about who you are and what's going on in your soul, but also for the other person or other people to share deeply. So what we will cover is a two-way thing that needs to be fostered and encouraged. So before we get into what holds us back, we need to, if you come from a church setting or a church culture where deep, meaningful conversations don't happen very often, it's something that you're going to have to work at fostering. It's not going to happen overnight, very probable, unless you find those kindred spirits who you can just connect with and go deep with right away. But oftentimes there's things that hold us back. So I'm going to let my wife share a little bit about what holds us back.
So how many of you would say that you, on a regular basis, have deep conversations with people that you church with? That's a good question. I see, we'll maybe talk about that, but I see some of you going like this, some of you yes, some of you no. Regular would be maybe like, it's not a time frame, but you know, on a regular basis, so maybe not every single week, but you're consistently going below the surface. So we'd like to talk just a little bit, have you give your input on what's holding when you don't have, and if you aren't having those kinds of deep conversation, what's holding you back? So we'd like to just call out, what do you think keeps you from having those conversations that go below the surface? Right. We're going to just write them up here on the flip chart.
Not safe.
Okay, that's a great one. Whoa, just wait. Judgment, anxiety, did someone say? Pride, okay, did I miss another one?
Fear.
Okay, fear. Great. Busyness, distractions. Okay. We're going to call it emotional energy. Okay. Being misunderstood. Okay, good. You don't have, it was never modeled, or you don't have, yeah, I'll just write it was never modeled. That's good.
Tried and failed.
Okay, that's a good one. Tried and failed. What's that? Okay. Not knowing if it's welcome.
Not
Okay. Surface stuff is easier. Definitely safer. What was the other one? Okay, this will be our last one because we're out of room. Not wanting to be a drain or bother someone. Okay, there's, yeah, that's a great list. There's a lot of reasons why, as we can see, we didn't have to think very hard at all to think about why isn't this happening. I think all of us would say we want it, of course, but we all seem to realize that it's not happening. Here's a few of them that we thought about. I think fear can be categorized deeper. So fear might be one of the biggest hindrances, and then there's some of the others that you listed that we have as well. But those fears of maybe past hurts, Aaron said, you know, tried and failed. Maybe you feel you're going to appear unspiritual if you, you know, share deeply. Maybe afraid of losing respect if people know who you really are and how you really think. Trying to fix. Every time you share something, that person's just like trying to fix you and give you all their advice. Maybe some church cultures are very strong on gossip and talking about other people. And so you're afraid if I share my deepest struggle with you, you know, someone's going to say, did you know so-and-so? And you find out it's being talked about. And then that could be used against you. So fear, I think, really is a big, but there's other hindrances. Some of them we mentioned, the busyness and the emotional energy, and just one of you said about not having it modeled, kind of like, I don't even know where to start. Like, I want to have a deep conversation, but I don't even know where to start. Who do I even pick? How do we get started? And like one of you said, too, about not wanting to be a burden, or if people aren't asking me what's below the surface, I'm not going to go around and say, hey, I need to talk, you know, does anybody really want to know what's down there? No, you just listen to other people. And if you have that great person that asks you good questions, you'll share, you're open. I feel like I'm an open book. I'll share deeply, but I'm not going to just offer information. I need someone to come and ask me what's really happening and how am I doing, and then I'll share. But yeah, so great feedback there on things that are holding us back.
So in Colossians 3, verse 12, we get some attributes that God wants us to be clothed with as we think about our relationships, as we think about relating to each other and communication. And Colossians 3:12 says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. That's all of you. How does he want us to relate? How does he want us to be? Clothe yourselves with compassion, with kindness, with humility, with gentleness, and with patience. That is the heart attitude or the approach that we should bring to have deep, meaningful conversations, because if we're approaching it from a selfish, egotistic, prideful perspective, it won't go well, as many of us have demonstrated in our lives and in our communications. So as we looked at how do we foster deep, meaningful conversations within our churches, we definitely agreed that without a safe place, without safe people, it's not going to happen. That being a safe place or having safe people to share with, to open up that part of your life, your soul with, is a key part, is foundational, it's fundamental. It's essential in the sense that if you don't have it, nothing else that we share is really going to work or is going to be impactful. So creating a safe place is really important, and it's really that first step. And so we want to talk to you about what being safe means. So being safe means committing to only tell your own story. Each of us have a story that makes up that events that we've, or experiences that we've been through, maybe hurts and pains and stresses and joys and sorrows and successes. And they all make up the story of our life. And where we get into trouble is when we start sharing each other's stories. We talk about other people. We pass along their stories and what happened to them and how they're thinking and what they're feeling type of thing. So part of being a safe place, that first step in being a safe place, is to committing to never tell someone else's story. So if I'm hearing from Dawn and she's sharing deeply about her life and I'm impacted by what she shares, now that becomes a part of my story. But in sharing it maybe with Elijah, I don't talk about Dawn's story, but maybe I say, wow, I was talking to someone at church and they really shared something hard and now I'm burdened. Would you pray for me? So I'm talking about myself, about my story, not sharing Dawn's story without at least her permission to do so. So that eliminates all that gossip talk thing, because a lot of times when we talk about the fear of it being cheered around and used against us later on. The other part about being a safe place is avoid reacting when someone does share with you. When we react to each other, where we express surprise, disappointment, or disapproval, we just shut it down and we make it where it's not a safe place to share anymore because of the person's shock or whatever. But so to be a safe place for your friend, or to foster that safe place culture in your church, there needs to be purpose where you're not reacting, but you understand that we're all in life together. The other aspect is to avoid trying to fix people. When people share their heart and unburden their soul, they don't want to be the next project. They don't want to be thought of as that person. And when we jump in and immediately try to fix them, it just makes it an unsafe place. It's a place where people will avoid being vulnerable or avoid sharing what's in their soul if the first thing we do is try to fix them, where we have all the answers and we tried to play the part of the Holy Spirit in their life. James 3:17 says, "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere." It's not self-serving. It's not about what's in it for me. Another part about being a safe place for people is in conversation is to reciprocate that vulnerability. If you have somebody who seems like they have it all together and they never disclose that they're human too, it can be really awkward to try to share with them, or you're more guarded in what you say or how you say it. So if someone's sharing with you, you know, say, "Wow, I understand," or "That's really difficult what you shared. I can relate to it because I went through a similar situation, or I have a similar struggle." And it allows them to see that you're human, that you don't have it all together, and that you're a safe place. And even those people who do seem like they have it all together, if indeed you are interested in their life and you ask questions, you quickly find out that they're human as well. Another aspect of being a safe place is to avoid approaching your relationships as self-serving, where you're trying to get something from that person or to fix them because it benefits you somehow.
Or your church.
So you don't want to approach it from a self-serving, like, "I need you to be like this or to fix this area of your life because it will benefit me somehow." So when we approach life and our church and our relationships in a self-serving type way, it just makes it unsafe and people are guarded. So it's not about you. Let's not make our relationships about us. Dean Taylor was sharing, you know, about how that brotherhood group in the military, you know, they were more loving and concerned about the safety of the other people than they were about themselves. It wasn't a self-serving, what can I get out of this? And to always approach your relationships with the best in mind, keeping others best in mind. So when people see that you're not trying to serve yourself and you're not in it for yourself and you have their best in mind, it's easier to open up and be vulnerable. So there's lots of different verses in the Bible that speak to it. 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, you know, says you can be an incredible, amazing person with amazing gifts and abilities, but without love, basically all of your talents and abilities are worthless. There's lots of other verses that I would challenge you to study on your own that we don't have time to go through here, but the Bible is full of verses that speak to how we relate together.
Okay, so the second part of the, we're calling it a cycle to deep conversations. So the first one is you have to be a safe place. If you're not a safe place, I would venture to say you're probably not going to ever go deep. So that is like the foundation, the first step. Another part of the cycle of going deeper is drawing people out. So we're going to do a demonstration to give you an example of drawing people out. But the verse in James that says the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws it out. There is a drawing that needs to happen in conversations. So Verna, if you want to come up. So before we give you any ideas on what it means to draw people out, we're going to do two conversations. Please observe, and we're going to ask for your input on what went right or what went wrong. So hi, Verna, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Yeah. So do you like being married?
Yeah, I really like it.
That's great, that's good. Do you like living in the city?
Yeah, it's okay.
That's great, that's good. Hey, we'll see you later. Okay. What? Any observations?
How did it go?
Pardon? Okay. What kind of questions did I ask? Okay. Surface question. Yes and no questions. I said, do you like being married? She just recently got married, for those of you who don't know. She said yes. You know, I said, do you like living in the city? She said, it's just, if you ask questions that have a yes and no answer, the conversation just dies. Any other observations, Timothy?
There's no invitation.
Okay.
I thought she looked like she wanted to sit down, but you didn't invite her.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
You didn't share any information about yourself.
Okay. That's good. So if you can't hear, he said, I didn't share any information about myself. I was just asking her questions. Yes. Okay, good. No human connection. Sorry, what did you say? Okay. Yep. Any other observation? Those are all really good. No? Okay. Verna can come back up. Please observe again, and we'll have your feedback. Hey, Verna, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Oh, good. Hey, let's sit down. So, we just got back from our trip to Spain, spending time together.
Oh, nice.
You know, after you're married for a while, it's, especially once you have children responsibility, it can kind of, you're newly married, but it can kind of take like the back burner.
I believe it.
So it's really good to just get away together.
Yeah, I'm really
so
glad
I feel
you
like,
could do that.
Yeah, very energized right now. So you've been married a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite part about being married so far?
Wow, good question. So I'd say probably the fact that I don't have to say goodbye to Elijah. It's really nice having one person in my life that I don't have to say goodbye to, especially after having lived a lot of my single life in various places and always saying goodbye to people after a while. Mm-hmm. So it's just really nice to have one person to do everyday life with.
And that's amazing. Always there. I remember we would say that to each other when we first got married.
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't ever have to say goodbye. We had a long distance relationship, yeah, which made it harder too, but that's good. You don't have to answer this, but has there been any challenges that have surprised you so far?
The change and upheaval of, I think I didn't realize I was going to feel that so intensely.
Hmm. Do you want to share more about that? Like, what's the upheaval you're feeling?
Yeah, I mean, just with moving away from my family, going to a different church now, and yeah, it's just a lot of changes, moving from the country into the city, and just, I feel like my life has just changed,
mm-hmm,
in like almost every way, it feels like sometimes.
Yeah. That's really hard. I did the same thing when I got married, and it takes a while to, mm-hmm, start feeling. How do you like living in the city?
I really like it. Wow. I actually really like it. Love getting to know my neighbors and being able to walk everywhere. And yeah, it's really fun. I miss some parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, I'm glad my parents still live in the country so I can go visit, yeah, them in the country, but I do like the city a lot.
Wow, that's great. I came to your house to drop Gilbert off and at night, and I was like, I've dealt with fear in my past a lot.
Mm.
I think living in the city would be really challenging for me, mm, because, I don't know, it feels scary.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's not for everyone.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're enjoying that. Okay. Yeah. Well, hey, it was great talking with
you. Yeah,
you
too.
Later.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Any observations? It felt totally different. You felt different, okay. Okay, that's interesting. It's good. It's good. Genuine interest. Okay. So you notice instead of me saying, do you like living in the city? I said, how do you like living in the city? Or how has it been for you living in the city? Instead of saying, do you like being married? I said, what's the favorite part about being married? And have there been any challenges? Do you remember what I said before the challenges? What was the question I asked her before that? Yeah. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to. But have there been, that invites her to be as vulnerable as she wants. Any other observations? Okay. Sharing from my own experience. Mm-hmm. Okay, so expressing or being vulnerable as kind of a leading example of vulnerability. That's great. So one of the big things in drawing people out is to watch, which this wasn't necessarily demonstrated in this example, but is to watch for bubbles. You know, like when you're sitting by a lake and you see the bubbles come to the surface, what does that mean? There's something down below. So did you know people give off bubbles when they're talking to you? It indicates that there's something important down below in their heart. And if you're interested and if you're watching, it's their silent sort of invitation to go deeper. It's basically, sometimes it's a conscious bubble, sometimes it's an unconscious message to you to say there's something more they want to talk about. So it can be stuff like, you know, their body language. It can maybe be emotion that they show, tears or laughter, or maybe silence. Or they can make comments like, you know what, nobody cares about that, you know. I don't want to talk about it. Nobody's interested in that. That's their way of saying, I really have something to talk about that I don't feel like I ever get to discuss. It's that verbal way of putting a bubble out to you. So we're going to talk about a few ways to respond to people and drawing people out. Watch for bubbles. The second one is to ask good questions. So you just saw that demonstrated. Most of us ask either too many or the wrong kind of questions. Have you ever been in a conversation where you feel like it's almost like an interrogation or it's just like, you know what, I'm not really feeling like answering that, which goes back to the safe place. If someone is safe, they can ask a lot of questions and you don't feel bothered. But if they're not feeling safe, the questions can turn into an interrogation. The other bad way to ask questions is the first example of questions that can be answered with one answer. Yes or no, or just a one-answer question. The conversation just dies off constantly and tends to not go deep because it doesn't require them to get emotionally involved at all in what they're responding to. So some examples of open questions, you saw it in the conversation of asking, you know, what was your favorite part about, you know, whatever? What's the biggest challenge for you? You know, are there any surprises? Those kind of things are open-ended questions that they have to say more than just a yes or a no. Another kind of invitation is kind of question is a kind that's an invitation. So one of the questions I asked Verna was, would you like to talk to tell me more about how you're feeling, the upheaval you're feeling? It's an invitation for them. And sometimes they might say, no, actually, I don't. And that's okay. But often people will respond to an invitation question with going deeper. Or you can use the I wonder questions, like, I wonder how you got through that, or I wonder what was that like for you? You're sort of in a contemplative sort of, you know, I wonder how that was, and they'll be like, yeah, it was really whatever. So those are some of the examples of kinds of questions, open-ended questions, invitation questions, would you like to share more, and I wonder questions are all good ways to draw people out and to go deeper. Back to the too many questions. Be careful that you don't ask too many questions if you're new in the conversation and the friendship, or that you don't like go too deep right away. So, Verna, if you want to come back up here, we're going to have another conversation for you to observe. So to preface this, I don't know Verna very well. She just got married and moved to our church, and I think she looks really sweet, and I would really like to learn to know her, and I want to have a deep conversation with her. So I'm going to go up and try to have a good conversation that goes deep. I don't want to talk about canning peaches. So, hi, Verna. How are you?
Good.
It's nice to see you. Mm-hmm. So, what have you been struggling with in your life lately?
I've had some relationship challenges recently.
You know, yeah, I've had relationship challenges too, and I just found that rather than struggle with it, I just take it to the Lord and pray about it and just give it all to him, and I just don't struggle. It's more of a, you know, taking it to the Lord. I would really recommend that you do that rather than struggle. But I'm really glad that you shared. So
thanks for that. I'm actually on for hospitality, so I gotta go.
Oh, okay. Hey,
thank you.
We'll catch you later. Yeah. Okay, observations.
Awkward.
You said ouch. Yeah.
You dived in to something you didn't have her trust. You hadn't earned the right to ask that question.
That's right. I was not a safe place. We don't know each other. And out of the great intention of my heart to really learn to know Verna and go deep, I just jumped in there. How likely do you think Verna will be to come up to me next Sunday and talk to me? Not likely, probably. She'll probably actually dive around the crowd and avoid me because I am really not safe now. Okay, sorry. If you want to come back up, we'll replay that. Same scenario. We don't know each other. Hey, nice to see you. So how has your week been this week?
It's been a challenging week, actually.
Sorry to hear that. Do you want to share more about that? Or?
I appreciate you asking, but I honestly don't really feel like talking about it right now. But
that's okay. You know, I've been there too. Sometimes, yeah, I don't feel like talking about it either. That's okay.
Thank you.
I'll definitely pray for you.
Thank you. That means a lot.
When the Lord brings you to my mind, that God will meet you in whatever you're facing this week.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, it was really nice to say hi at least. Yeah. Good to see you. Okay. How likely do you think Verna will be to come talk to me in the future? Probably likely. You know, I don't know really anything more about her other than I know she's struggling with something. She doesn't want to talk about it. That's okay. But now I have a kind of a foundation. I was safe in that I didn't push her. And next time we see each other at church or I have her over, we can talk about, hey, how's it going for you now? And you have something to kind of build on. Now we made a little bit of a connection that we didn't have before. So it's vastly, the same scenario can be vastly different in just how you approach people and how you give them space to go as deep as they want to. Okay, and lastly on drawing people out, this is on the be interested in caring and don't push is what we just talked about. And then the last one is another way, it's on your handout, another way to draw people out is when they share something. So let's say Verna, the examples here on the handout with the cycle. If Verna shared with me that her mom's health is failing and it's been really hard for her to accept that, you know, I can say, she's sharing about her mom. I can say, you know, I see that that's really difficult for you to have your mom in failing health and, you know, how can I pray for you? If you make observations about something in the conversation that they're sharing and then follow up with a question or it sounds like you almost didn't make it through, you know, what was that like for you? Where you make an observation and follow up with a question. Another good way of drawing people out and going deeper.
All right, so we talked about the importance of having a safe place and then the need to draw people out. People often won't just share. You have to build that trust, that rapport, that connection with people to be able to have deep, meaningful conversations, especially if you have a pattern of shallow type communications that are not expecting to go deep. And maybe you are in a church where there's a culture of people talk and people talk about each other and share each other's stories and things, and it hasn't been safe in the past. You have to, you know, work harder to be that safe place and then to draw them out. So once you ask those great questions and people are willing to share and they start opening up to share, then the next aspect of great communications is listening well. And we are oftentimes better talkers than we are listeners. And during the time when we're the other person speaking, we're not paying attention to what they're saying. We're thinking about other things. And James says, "My dear friends, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen and slow to speak and slow to become angry or reactionary when you're hearing, you know, someone speak. So slow to speak and slow to become angry, but quick to listen." So we're going to talk about good listening. Do you have another demonstration? Mm-hmm. So they're going
to... Are we supposed to be done at 12:15 or 12 o'clock? Okay, we have 15 minutes. Okay, so we're going to do a demonstration. Hey, good to see you. How are you?
Good.
Good. So, yeah, tell me what's happening in your life.
Well, it's... I just like moved to new church and just got married, and so that's been, it's been interesting. I think my life before I was married and like all the social events and the youth events and like always being with the young people and now being part of like the married.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah, I know. I know how that goes.
Kind of trying to find my place.
Yeah,
and like
totally.
There's a lot of the women have babies, and I don't yet. And yeah.
No, but you should do. You should actually, like, when I first got married, I moved to a new community and everything. I like decided, okay, the only way I'm gonna get to know people is if I go invite myself to people's houses. So I just like called people up. Can I come help you? So. You should try that. That would probably help with kind of transitioning into the wife mode and adult ladies conversations and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But you know, I forgot. I was going to ask you about something. I think it was about the church picnic. Are we supposed to bring like something for hot and a cold dish? Or I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah, both.
Okay. Okay, so how did I do at listening to... Terrible. What are some of the things that you noticed that were poor listening tactics? Okay, my phone. Yawning. Okay, distracted. I highly dislike talking to someone who is, you're standing there and they're looking like, I stop. If I'm talking to someone and they are looking at something back there, I'll just like stop in the middle of my sentence till they like, yeah, that's very highly distracting. Sorry, someone was going to say something.
Interruption.
Okay, interrupting. Yeah. Okay, let's, for sake of time, let's have one more conversation here. Hey, good to see you.
You too.
Wow, it's been a while since I've talked to you. Have a seat. I would love to hear what's happening in your life.
Well, I'm really excited about this new thing that Elijah and I have been... helping plan. We are starting English classes in Lancaster City again.
Really?
So we have been, I think we've been doing it for like 2 weeks now, and it's going really well.
Wow. And so who is the classes for or with? Or?
So it's for refugees right now. We're hoping that we get some new refugees. Mm-hmm. But right now we're also doing citizenship classes, actually, so people who've been here longer. Who want to become U.S. citizens, they have to take this test. And so we're helping them become familiar with the U.S. history and stuff that I even I hardly
wow,
know.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's
so
it's
you
really fun.
Teaching or
mm-hmm. Yeah, Elijah and I are teaching a citizenship class together actually, and then there's like two other classes with that are teaching English.
Okay. Interesting. What a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah,
to
I'm really, really
reach
thankful
out to the
for
refugees,
it. Mm-hmm.
Especially this time of yeah. It's happening with them.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I would love. Can people come and if I'm interested, can people come and?
Oh yeah, yeah. You can come visit for a night. We have Mondays and Thursdays and evenings.
Wonderful.
So yeah, if you would like to, you should just send me a text sometime, and I'll totally welcome to come visit.
Hey, I will do that, actually. I would be very
great.
Interested.
Yeah, I would love that if you could do that.
Okay. Okay. What was different? Okay, posture. Sitting. Laid my phone aside. Okay. Okay, follow-up questions. Sorry, what'd you say? Yeah.
Lean forward.
Yeah, I was engaged in listening to what she was saying. I actually didn't know that she was doing that, so I'm actually seriously interested. So you can see the difference in just being a good listener, like draws the conversation deeper and people are ready to talk and share.
So just like you observe the body language and how the person you're speaking to is how well they're listening, the people you are listening to are also observing, you know, your body language and how well you're listening. And we oftentimes kill off our relationships or kill off or stunt them or deaden them before they even really have a chance to get started by not listening well, not showing that we're truly interested, that we're paying attention, that we really care about the other person. And yeah, we are oftentimes distracted by our phones or by what else is happening in the room or what we're thinking about and interrupt where we turn the conversation about to ourselves or about us, or we fidget and move around where they can tell we're wanting to go. We're waiting for them to get done so we can go. And we don't have much eye contact. We're constantly shifting and looking other places. A big distraction is what's happening in our head when people are talking to us, because most people aren't listening to you. Most people are thinking about what they're going to say as soon as you stop talking and what their response to whatever you're saying is. If you're sharing something deep, they're thinking about how to fix you. And those sorts of things just kill off our relationships and stunt them. So to foster a deep, meaningful conversation culture in our churches and with each other is to be that good listener and to really be paying attention and delay thinking about your response till after they're done talking, because silence is okay in conversations, and to be okay with silence. Sometimes when they stop talking, if people will just jump in and start talking right away, but to give them some space and time is an invitation for them to share more. Now, you don't want to delay it to the point where it becomes awkward, but be okay with silence. And, you know, they might be, when you stop talking, they might be thinking, have been listening intently to what you were saying, and then are, you know, is thinking about what they're going to share, their reply to you. So be okay with silence in conversation.
Okay, so the last step in the deep conversation, it's like a screw as you turn it in. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper. So we had definitely you have to be a safe place. You're drawing people out. You're listening well. You've gotten deep, and your friend has just shared their heart and their story, and it's wow. So now what? What do you do when you've gotten deep and your friend has shared something with you that either surprised you or, yeah, you had no idea what was happening in their heart. Now what? I'll take the... I would like to suggest that you go back to the next part of the cycle and go back up to being a safe place. So don't express surprise, and like we've talked about, surprise and shock or disapproval. Don't express criticism. If they just shared something that you're like, man, these people are, this person is, you know, scary and they're, you know, where are they going with this? Don't criticize. Just validate and normalize their feelings or whatever they're sharing. Probably anything that's shared with you, maybe you've not experienced it, or maybe haven't talked to someone who's struggling or dealing with whatever they have, but there are people in the world that have. You know, this is not a new thing. So just validate them and, you know, wow, that's really, really difficult. If you express, and you probably all can think of this, if you are sharing something deep, and even if the person kind of, you know, steps back or criticizes you, and I've had somebody, you know, already, when I did something that I thought was the Lord, you know, what the Lord told me to do, and I was sharing it, and they said, oh, you shouldn't have done that. You know, that was the wrong thing to do. It's just like, okay, you know, maybe it was the wrong thing to do, but that's not the time to share that, because, wow, that just, like, really cut. So in being that safe place and going back around is just inviting them to share more. Pray with them or ask, you know, I've had friends say, would you like to pray together about that right now? That is really challenging. Would you like to pray together? Or I've had sometimes I've asked someone, you know, do you want to pray about that? And they're like, you know, not right now. And I'll say, that is fine. I will pray for you. But just to express love and care for their situation or whatever they're dealing with. And then follow up. So if you have a deep conversation with someone, they shared their heart, and that's the last time you talk to them in a long time, what are they going to think? What would you think if it was you? You just really shared deeply. Jackie, what would you think? Yeah. They didn't care, or else, whew, I must have, back to those fears, I must have lost their respect, or what are you saying? Yeah, I chased him away, and that's the end of the conversation. So even if you can't get together right away again, if you can follow up with a text and say, I really enjoyed talking with you last week, and you've been on my heart. I prayed for you today. Just something to follow up with them that they know that it's safe to keep going, and it becomes this spiral going deeper and deeper. We have 5 minutes.
All right. So oftentimes, you know, when we're communicating with people from our church or in our church community, it's before or after a service when we have time constraints, or maybe it's loud because everybody's visiting together. So sometimes the best time to connect or to follow up or to build those deep relationships, meaningful conversations, is outside of the church service. Working together is a great way, especially for us guys. We like shoulder-to-shoulder type relationships. Women do better with face-to-face type. So sometimes working together helps just sort of break the ice and loosen it up. Driving, going somewhere together where you're driving for an extended time is a great time to share hearts. Campfires or camping. Coffee shops are great conversational places as well. Or visiting in each other's homes. But oftentimes when we've established those deep, meaningful conversations, that we've had them with other people from our church, it's easier for us to pick it up at church and resume it. But it's really hard if you just depend on after church to try to build them. It'll take some time to do so. So make space outside of the church, and then start small and grow. Obviously, trust is built over time. Like Don said, it's sort of like a screw. Every time you go around that cycle, it's going deeper and deeper. So start small and grow, and maybe even start, you know, with a small group of people. Maybe there's one person. If you don't have a church culture of sharing, having deep, meaningful conversations and sharing deeper stuff, is to find one or two people that you can and express it. Hey, I was at the Church Engage conference and I sat through a session and I really have a desire for people in my life that we can share deeply together. Would you be willing, you know, for me to share what I learned and for us to be able to be that safe place and to listen well and really grow? Because ultimately the goal is for everyone in your church to have someone or a group of people that they can share deeply with, because there's a lot of lonely people out there and a lot of lonely people in our churches, a lot of lonely people sitting on the pew with us where they're used to sharing what's above the surface on social media and Facebook and such, but they never really have opportunity to share below. And that's where that brotherhood bond is built, is in sharing deeply with someone, being able to be real and vulnerable and not have it be thrown back at you at some later time or hear it talked around. So find that one person. Maybe after you have it built, you can invite two other people, each one, to make it four, and then eight, and 16, and 32. However, there is a limit to the number of people you can have deep, meaningful conversations with, perhaps, in your church.
32 is probably unrealistic, but
32 is probably unrealistic. You might have to, you know, you'll sort of naturally find those people that you can share with, you do connect with best. But like I said, ultimately, you know, it'd be great if the church culture could be one of deep, meaningful conversations, where the conversations go below just canning peaches. So making enough time and often enough to maintain those relationships to show that you care is a part of that community that Dean Taylor was talking about, getting involved in each other's lives. So we talked about this. It's unrealistic to think you're going to have a deep, meaningful conversation with every sister or every brother
every
time in your church. But yeah, start with a few and look to really develop it out. So it's a part, it ministers to your soul in a way that a lot of other things can, is to have another Christian brother or sister, depending, you know, to be able to share. And obviously it's brother to brother and sister to sister. Deep, meaningful conversations between, it can go bad places, so
I would say that you can have, I can have a deep conversation with, in a group setting, definitely with somebody.
Yeah.
From the opposite gender.
Yeah. So, yeah, just that cycle, it repeats itself once you get to listening well and having that emotional vulnerability, then it's back to being a safe place and drawing people out. So, all right, any questions that you have before we bring it to a close and go for lunch?
I would say you definitely, like the example of going deep right away, if you don't know someone, so you're not going to have a deep conversation probably unless you're really good at asking good questions. You're not going to have a deep conversation with a perfect, someone that you don't know well at all. So there is a time and place for more casual conversation, and if you try to just bam, go deep, you know, right at the beginning, you're going to scare people away. They're going to be like, well, he's the kind that, like, you know. But some people actually invite that. Some people love to go deep immediately. But most people probably need a little time. However, if you ask good questions, you can show that you're a safe person, and then maybe they'll go deep, maybe they won't. I would say, you know, how do you know when to end? You can kind of tell, you know, if it's a little bit awkward, or if you have a time, you know, something that you need to
do, you can, you know, excuse yourself to, especially at the beginning. And when you're deep, then usually it's the clock that ends the conversation. It's like, I would love to keep talking, but I gotta go.
And you can schedule a time to, you know, pick it back up later on if you say, hey, I would love to hear, you know, to continue to have you be able to share. Can we schedule a time next week or, you know, whatever it is, to be able to pick it back up and really hear. But you can sort of tell when people, if given enough time, when they get to the end of sharing and they reach that calm, quiet thing in their heart, and you can be quiet and they won't pick it up again. It's like they've talked it out, so to speak. And that's the ideal place to get, where their soul has reached that resting point. But just a little bit, as far as people who've grown up on the mission field or third cultures, they're used to going deeper, faster. So if you have a missionary in your church or a missionary child in your church, they're used to going deep, faster. So you can be ready for that difference. Americans, we take some time to build trust, where oftentimes missionary children at least go quick. So.
That was subconscious, actually. That's interesting.
But that
though.
Often happens.
Yeah. You tend to, if you're caring, your tone definitely is different.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to make like this a hard structure. You have to sort of flow with the conversation.
But I would say caring. Totally.
But,
I mean, you don't want to say, you know what, Rodney told me he's struggling with that same issue. Just last week I was talking with him and he told me, you know, but you can definitely say, you're not alone in this. If you haven't struggled with it, whatever it is, or dealt with the same issue, you know, you're not alone in this. I know of someone else right now who's dealing with the same thing, and, you know, we're going to get through this together. So definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. Okay, yes. I don't have that handout here. So when someone's sharing something with you, I'm sure you probably can think of this too. This has happened to probably all of us. You're sharing something and they say, but, you know, don't you know that all things work together for good? Or, but I'm sure they didn't mean it that way. Like if you're saying, but that word never helps the conversation when someone is sharing deeply. It instantly, what's the word?
Sort of trivializes or
yeah,
negates.
Makes it, or like doesn't validate. It does the opposite of validating. It's just like, well, of course I know, you know. Let's say someone just lost a child and is grieving deeply and once they're, and you say, you know, but you know they're at a better place, you know. That's not helpful. Of course, you know they're at a better place, but that but whatever is not a good word to add in there. Most times, if you're a person following, you know, after God and working through things, if you read the Psalms, David comes to that place a lot.
but for God, you know, but I would have done this, you know, unless God kind of thing. So we do get to that place eventually, but it's never helpful to put that word into other people's lives. So, yeah, thank you for that. Okay.